Well, this is Current Yield, Grant's Interest Rate Observer of the Air, and I am Jim Grant. And with you, as always, is Evan Lorenz, the great deputy editor of Grant's. And as per usual, Henry French is our sound engineer. And I don't know, Evan, is it true that we have a podcast not concerning AI?
Do such things still exist?
I think there's been some sort of clerical mistake. If it's not, perhaps crypto, then we have, is crypto the topic today?
I can trash talk Bitcoin if you want to.
No. We have to look at something topical. What, you say it's insurance, is it?
Yeah. Did you know that auto insurance increased at 20.6% rate year over year in January, according to the CPI report?
That's kind of an AI thing, isn't it? It's kind of a...
It doesn't match NVIDIA's price appreciation, but it ain't nothing.
Yeah. We just annualize it. It's multiplied times what? 100. Anyway, we are privileged today, ladies and gentlemen, to have in our presence Steve Virgili and Steve Shapiro. And they are associated with a fine organization called New Vernon Wealth Management. And they know all about insurance, which, in fact, is just as timely as this. What do you say was timely?
Well, it wasn't Bitcoin or AI.
Insurance is the thing. So, Steve, welcome.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it very much.
You are entitled. So I think you know what we're going to do? We are going to address one of you as Steve and one of you as Stephen. So I don't want to be in charge of this. Who wants to be Stephen and who wants to be Steve? Come on, speak up.
I'll be Stephen.
But who are you?
Since I'm older.
That's Mr. Shapiro.
Stephen Shapiro.
Okay. Mr. Shapiro is Stephen.
My credit card says Stephen. So
done. You'll call me. So thank you for being with us. And tell us, what is new in insurance?
Sure. This is Steve Virgili. And as Evan pointed to, premium rates in the insurance space in the personal auto line space have been increasing in a pretty material way over the last, call it 6-12 months. That's not new, but really what I would say is kind of new, or at least becoming more topical, is this concept of social inflation, which is starting to drive other loss cost trends, inflationary trends higher, or at least continuing to kind of underpin those loss cost trends.
For people who aren't familiar with the insurance industry, I mean, economic inflation is when it cost me $12 to buy breakfast when last year was $10. Or there's also market inflation, where the price of NVIDIA just shoots to the moon every day. What is social inflation?
Social inflation refers to the ever-rising jury awards, settlement awards that are being awarded. So that inflation continues almost unabated, I would say.
Can you contrast and compare social inflation with revenge porn?
That's a tough one.
Is the social inflation is part of it? Social friction? Is it juries seeking revenge on designated evil ones? Why do we call it social inflation? And is there a societal element in this, or is it simply a case of, another form of inflation? People imagining large sums of money.
At first, it did seem to be somewhat societal, at least to us. And of course, the concept of compensation from large corporations, or worse yet, insurance companies, seems to be some form of social justice.
Yeah.
And that's certainly been happening. But I think more specifically, it's become quite an industry. And I think that we've all observed proliferation of legal advertisements everywhere. And there's the industry of litigation finance, which has sprung up and provided good returns and non-correlated returns. So that seems to be an ongoing trend as well.
A friend of mine was a short seller back in the day, a very successful one, until he decided it was not worth the aggravation. And then he went around looking for something else to do. And he announced to his friends, "Hey, I finally found something sleazier than short selling. I'm going into financing lawsuit business." I think the way he did it was not sleazy. Well, but that was a self-deprecating approach to his new career.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, cases that typically and actuarially would have settled aren't settling.
Yeah.
And so that upends all the all the actuarial math around posting reserves and what kind of losses should be expected from all sorts of casualty related cases.
But beyond the last 6 or 12 months, where social inflation has gotten worse, insurance rates across the property and casualty sector have been outpacing the CPI for at least 4 or 5 years now. What's been driving this inflation beating price increases by the insurance industry, like just over the longer term?
Yeah, what the insurance industry covers is more prone to what has been driving kind of broader economic CPI type inflation over the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. It really kind of took hold following the pandemic as, you know, economies opened. And what you ended up with was a lot of supply chain disruption, labor shortages, and also, you know, housing shortages. You know, the housing market seems to be structurally undersupplied. And so kind of all those forces pooled together have served to really cause insured loss cost trends and property loss cost trends in particular to be elevated relative to kind of broader CPI measures. So that in a nutshell, I think is what's driving it. But it's also this social inflationary element to it, which, you know, you throw that kind of on top of everything and you've got these things pushing insured loss inflation higher. You know, wages are not insignificant component to insured loss costs. You know, it's still a tight labor market. So, at least for the time being. So, where workers' compensation pays people for lost wages when they get hurt on the job. So those factors are all kind of really what's driving the elevated loss cost inflation.
Is the rate of gain in insurance premiums equal to, less than, or in excess of the rising level of cost?
So at this point, just kind of broader high level, companies seem to have gotten up to par or at least a little bit above where those loss cost trends are with rate increases. It was a delayed reaction. Inflation in and of itself isn't bad for the insurance industry. It's the unexpected inflation. And when you had that really spike up in general kind of CPI economic inflation factors following the opening of the economies post-pandemic, that took the insurance industry by surprise and really caused a lot of companies to fall behind. But they've since been fighting pretty hard to catch up. And as Evan pointed out, you know, in January, year-over-year auto insurance premium CPI or growth or whatever was over 20%. And it's been at these kind of elevated levels for a number of months and quarters. And so they've, I think, in general, caught up. But now what we're, you know, what the industry is grappling with and struggling with and trying to deal with is this social inflationary impact and the continuation of that. And it's been delayed because the court system was so far backlogged because of the closures during pandemic. It's taken them a long time to work through that backlog and get up to speed. But now you're seeing a lot of these cases finally settle and hit the books. And so it's caused a number of companies in, you know, fourth quarter earnings season, a number of companies added pretty materially to reserves for that 2015 to 2019 accident year. And those were the cases that were backlogged in the court system. So you're seeing it catch up and companies are talking about it and they're adjusting pricing. And so going forward, our view kind of the industry is that more casualty and liability type lines of insurance are going to see a reacceleration of pricing going forward.
And just to give a couple examples of social inflation, because I know you've emailed me these stories before, you're not talking about like a claim that settles for $100,000 or $1 million. You sent me cases where these are tragedies. A trucker going across the country, perhaps didn't sleep well, might have been using drugs, kills a family in a car. And these are $1 billion jury settlements in some cases. Could you give us like an example or two of some of the larger cases just to put this in context?
You hit one on the head. I mean, the nuclear verdicts, as they're called, are generally viewed as jury awards in excess of $10 million. And so that, you know, those have have continued to increase. I don't have a specific court case in mind that I'm going to speak to, but it's more, it's just happening on a more regular basis, that size of award. And that's what's concerning to the insurance industry. And, there was an interesting study done by the American Property Casualty Insurance Association. They looked at loss and loss adjustment expenses in the commercial auto space in particular, and they found that claims which were represented by an attorney, the loss and LAE costs for those were 15 times higher than claims that didn't have an attorney associated with them. I think plaintiff's lawyers see this and people see this and they kind of grapple onto that. More cases that see these big awards encourage people to file more claims and hire more attorneys. It just kind of feeds on itself.
What's the check on the level of claims? Do judges have a say in how high these can go?
Ultimately, something like a billion-dollar jury award doesn't actually end up being paid out at $1 billion. So to your question, Jim, yes, there is some level of check and balance on it. But the judicial system, the waves in that system are long and almost meandering. I mean, it's almost a political thing at that point, societal, really. So it's hard to see any one event that'll change or turn the tide in this kind of social inflationary trend that we're seeing. At this point, the insurance companies are forced to just, do the best they can and try to price and alter terms and conditions as best they can. It's not that the insurance companies don't want to pay. They want to pay an appropriate amount for damages that are suffered by the insureds. It's just getting to that, what's considered appropriate.
And inflation, whether it's economic or social, not only increases rates, but it also increases the demand for coverage. Because if you need to cover, $10 million in liability versus $1 million in liability, that's a much larger amount of coverage you have to buy. Could you talk about, the demand for coverage and capital in the insurance industry? Is it keeping up with the increased demand as a result of inflation for the coverage that insureds are looking for?
Yeah. So based on Aon statistics and the big multinational insurance broker and all these big brokers keep statistics on the amount of capital in the overall reinsurance industry. Right now, capital as of year-end 2023 in the global reinsurance space is about $100 billion, which really isn't that much higher than it was, 5, 6, 7 years ago when it was like $95 billion. Now, that being said, I think more money is being attracted to the reinsurance and insurance space. I'm reading more and more about family offices and hedge funds and the like. Looking at and allocating capital to insurance-linked securities. And so that's going to add capital to the industry. But, in my view, it's really almost a drop in the bucket relative to the growth in nominal GDP, because inflation, as you were just pointing out, has really driven just insured asset values substantially higher. So, for now, pricing broadly has... The amount of increase in reinsurance prices in particular has leveled off. So it's not increasing at ever increasing rates, but it's kind of leveled off. But you're still seeing increases.
What are magnitude are in rates increasing now?
In the mid single digit range, kind of broadly speaking. So call it anywhere from 5 to 10%, depending on what lines of coverage you're talking about.
These are casualty lines.
Yeah,
that are increasing 5 to 10%. The personal lines is much higher.
Yeah, personal lines is much higher. So,
Stephen, you often hear about something or other, a place, a geographical place, or a line being uninsurable. Is that something that people ought to know about? What makes something uninsurable, and is that condition prevalent?
So, for example, a pandemic is really something that the industry views as uninsurable, and going back to
COVID, practically uninsurable.
It seems also large parts of California home are becoming uninsurable. I saw an article last year where AIG pulled out of standard home insurance. And I think California, a lot of insurers have pulled out of Florida.
Yeah, yes, they have. Those companies pulled out of those areas more as a function of the regulators in those states not allowing them to raise rates to a level that compensated them sufficiently for the risks that were being assumed. So those areas are insurable if the regulators will let them alter, you know, pricing and terms and conditions to make the product more, you know, so that they can earn an appropriate risk-adjusted return. As far as something like a pandemic, I don't know that would ever be insurable. I mean, that is a truly uninsurable event.
Okay, we're going to pause here for a word from your sponsor. This episode of Current Yield is brought to you by us. Yeah, we couldn't get anybody else. I think we couldn't find another sponsor, right, Evan?
Or not one as high quality.
Yeah. So I am going to pitch, ladies and gentlemen, our private credit event. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are around on Tuesday, around New York City, or care to log in remotely on Tuesday, Super Tuesday, March 5th, we have a private credit event. And this is one half day of a deep, deep inquiry into this most sizzling department of the credit markets. And we're having the top people in the business on hand, and it's going to be, I think, Evan, merely fabulous. So go to grantspub.com events and sign up. And while you're there, you can also subscribe. Any subscriptions left, Evan?
Do we? A few left.
Subscribe to Grants while you're at it. Anyway, so thank you for listening, and come on see us on Tuesday, Super Tuesday, March 5th, the most super part of the day will be right here in Manhattan at the Grants Private Credit Event. So that will conclude the word from our sponsor.
So Steven and Steve, the insurance market regularly goes through cycles of soft pricing and hard pricing. In the mid-2010s, pricing was notably weak. It has been strong for the last 4 or 5 years. This is a historically long in the tooth market for hard pricing. Is the hard pricing market going to continue? Do you see it abating, or do you see us switching to, I guess, a market where rates don't keep pace with inflation anymore? What do you see going forward?
I think a kind of a broader underpinning and reacceleration in certain lines. So not all lines are suffering the same social inflationary and CPI economic inflationary tailwinds or headwinds, if you will. So it's, you know, at this point, it's kind of more line of business specific. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, it seems like things are kind of balanced right now. But if you do start to see, an acceleration in this social inflationary these social inflationary trends, you know, if those accelerate and companies start to really get worried, then you can, yeah, see a reacceleration in pricing more broadly. And, you know, the reinsurance guys see it last because they're further away from the losses. And so if they start to, you know, start to see more and more losses, they'll get spooked by it and capital will retrench and pricing will go up.
So the insurance business is to a great degree an interest rate sensitive business. And tell me about the investment portion of the insurance business now that rates have picked themselves up off the floor and begun to look like normal interest rates again.
Yeah, you know, investment income has really, helped. The insurance companies have really benefited from both legs of the business performing strongly over the last 3, 4, 5 years. Underwriting has been extremely good for the good underwriters. And on top of that, you've had ever-increasing investment income as these companies are taking in these premium cash flows and investing them at ever higher interest rates. Mm-hmm. Coupons are being reinvested at higher rates, maturities, et cetera. Everything is kind of being invested at these higher rates. And it's really been the industry has benefited greatly from it.
Sounds like an investment opportunity.
On that, so like you say, both legs are working, but in your fourth quarter letter, you also point out that insurers are trading at a modest 13 times forward earnings. I guess, how do you make sense of kind of the low valuation in light of these earning tailwinds? Is the market anticipating an end to the hard market or some future problem? I'd love to know how you guys think about it.
there has certainly been, beginning late last year, some talk of property rates leveling out. And that is true, but they're leveling out at much higher prices. And those markets will continue to be somewhat cyclical. They're short tail markets, and the capital markets have expanded considerably. And going back to a previous question, I don't think lack of capital was the issue. I think it was adequate pricing to get the capital to come to the table. Mm. I think with respect to casualty, as we were saying, it's going to continue to be driven by what's going on in our societal court system. And if these kinds of casualty loss costs continue to increase, the only way to keep up with it is to pass it on through insurance premiums. And at some point, people will decide that they've had enough and perhaps there'll be some kind of tort reform. But I don't think it's really as cyclical as it used to be. The business is, it's not a business that's as much based on capital availability as it used to be. So I don't, to address the cycle, we may be leveling out on property. We're still going up on casualty, but I don't think you'll see the wild swings that we've seen in the past, maybe 30 years ago, 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago.
And why is that? Why has it become less cyclical?
I think the companies have just gotten a lot smarter in their business practices, a lot more, a lot of these companies, you are much more in tune with their books of business through the use of technology. They're just much more in tune with what's going on, and they're much more, aware of loss cost trends. 20, 30 years ago, you didn't really have technology. Everything took a lot longer. Today, Allstate and all these companies, they're using drones to fly over, hurricane devastated areas to see which homes have been done away with and which homes haven't been touched. Like, these companies are really, have really invested in technology. And so I think just the industry is a lot smarter than it was 20, 30 years ago.
Are there any ideas that you'd be willing to just discuss to illustrate kind of, I guess, the value that you're finding insurance today and companies that can still continue to grow premiums given the future you see ahead of us?
Yeah, for my part, I mean, I'm a big fan of The Hartford right now. The Hartford is just, it's a company that's been around for 200 years. The stock trades at a little over 9 times earnings, and they're probably going to grow those earnings 11% a year for the next 2-3 years. So to your, question earlier about, valuation, I'll take that all day long, 9 times for 11 times earnings growth. Why doesn't it trade at a higher multiple? Who knows? I think insurance is just an area or an industry that the broader stock market, it doesn't have a cool story like AI or crypto or whatever. So it doesn't really attract the masses. Back to the Hartford in particular, their commercial lines business is, probably half of it is geared towards small companies, call it, 20 million in revenue or lower. And that really is kind of the lifeblood of the U.S. economy. And they have a really strong foothold in that part of the market. They have a name. People know them, brokers, the agents, they know the Hartford as being a market they can go to and trust. On the personal lines side of their business, personal lines makes up probably 15% of the Hartford, and the Hartford has an exclusive arrangement with AARP to serve as the exclusive carrier for AARP members for auto insurance and homeowners insurance. And guess what's the fastest growing cohort in the U.S. economy is that aging population, that 50 plus population that's growing, call it 10-12% a year. That's embedded growth for the Hartford right there in the personal lines business. So they have, a foothold in parts of the U.S. economy that I think are very attractive. Yet stock trades, like I said, at 9 times earnings. They're very good with their capital management. Over the last 2-3 years, they've
been returning roughly $2 billion a year to shareholders via share buybacks and dividends. About $1.6 billion of that $2 billion is just in share buybacks. So if you take, you know, $1.6 billion over, call it, they do the same amount of share buybacks over 10 years, that's $16 billion of share buybacks. Shareholders' equity is $15 billion. So they're effectively buying the company back over every 10-year time period. And that's, you know, that's again, underpinning, support to the stock price.
I would also add that, Chubb tried to take the company over several years ago.
Unsuccessfully. But yeah, as Steve's pointing out, that just shows, you know, if Chubb is trying to buy them, that means they have something that's very attractive.
A question for you. So insurance is a cyclical industry, but it's not one tied to the overall economy. Whether we go into recession this year or not, people still need auto insurance that's mandated by law. It trades at kind of undemanding multiples. They often have good capital allocation in terms of paying out dividends and buying back stock. Why aren't investors interested in the sector?
You know, Evan, I mean, that's kind of a bittersweet fact that we kind of live with every day. Bitter in the fact that, you know, I wonder to myself the same thing. Why don't people value this industry more? Why don't they value these value creators more than they do? But at the same time, it's sweet for us because we get to own the Hartford at 9x earnings and enjoy the benefit of the value creation that, you know, the company creates. and we don't have to pay a lot for it. So, you know, it's kind of a bittersweet thing.
It's not an industry group that has ever really benefited from sort of a secular multiple expansion. And it's not a great industry overall. Don't forget that there's a lot of non-public mutual companies that are very influential, and they're not as nearly as profitable as some of the best-run public companies that we're able to focus on. So I think investors sort of view it as a mature, sort of tired old industry. On the whole, that is what it is. But the best companies can offer great opportunity to compound returns.
How does the Hartford's 9x earning valuation compare to the rest of the business? And do you find anything that's comparable as an investment to the Hartford?
Yeah, you know, the Hartford at 9x earnings trades cheap relative to some of its other large cap peers like Chubb, Berkeley. Those guys trade more in the, you know, kind of 10 to 12 times earnings range. The insurance brokers trade at much higher valuations because those are balance sheet light, so to speak, businesses. You know, they don't take any balance sheet risks. So the insurance brokers trade more in the high teens multiples. So when we're looking at the S&P insurance index, it's kind of bifurcated. You have the brokers, you know, trading at those higher multiples, whereas the carriers trade at much lower valuation multiples. And the Hartford itself trades cheap relative to other carriers. So, which is why I like it. And I'm, you know, it's a little perplexing to me why it continues to trade cheap relative to the others. You know, going back, I think maybe it's just a function of kind of muscle memory. You know, the Hartford going back to 2008, you know, was one of the carriers that effectively was a zero because they had awful assets on the balance sheet and they had a large life insurance business. And it took them a long time to finally separate the life insurance business from the PNC business. And the PNC business that they have is, I think, one of the best out there. I mean, their combined ratios are in the 80s. That small commercial business literally writes in the mid 80s combined ratios, which is a 15%, you know, profit margin. I mean, that's very attractive, very sticky business, which I think deserves a much higher multiple. But, you know, for the longest time, the stock traded it cheaper valuations because of, I think, for, you know, the sins of the past.
As one other value add to our listeners, you mentioned that there are casualty lines that are actually still increasing at really NVIDIA-like rates. Could you identify a couple of those? And how should an insured person who's facing those kind of rate increases react? Do they shop around carriers? Are there ways to actually, I guess, get a lower bill?
You know, the lines of business that are seeing, premium rates continue to go up are the ones, are the problem child areas. The commercial auto, umbrella
excess casualty. Umbrella, excess casualty, those are the coverages that are that suffer from the social inflationary impact the most. How do the insureds deal with that? It really comes down to these companies, managing their own businesses better, trucking companies, training their drivers better, or being more discerning with who they hire, stuff like that. And the insurance carriers and the insurance brokers do help in those efforts. They have risk management groups that'll go into a company and insured and go through and kind of help lead them towards a better kind of risk management controls and whatnot. So it's a long process, but one that well-run companies probably need to go through.
Yeah, commercial auto, if you want to try to identify one line of business that's been the most difficult, commercial auto, which tends to be trucks and buses and limos, has probably been the most difficult. And it's easy to see why. On a recent drive from Bloomington, Indiana, back up to the Chicago area, there literally are hundreds of billboards for the same half a dozen or a dozen law firms. This is big business. Their advertising budgets are massive. So as long as these folks are making a lot of money, they're incentivized to keep putting their foot on the gas pedal, pardon the pun. That is a line of business that its profitability is proven very elusive.
Yeah.
So prices are continuing to go up.
It sounds like somebody in this call has business at Indiana University, in Bloomington, the Athens of the Corn Belt. Yeah,
exactly.
Yes, it is.
Right. Well, Steve and Stephen, Steve Virgili and Stephen Shapiro, thank you for being with us today. It was a very fine call and an excellent introduction into what seems like a pretty promising field of long-term value-laden investment. That's not like an advertorial.
Yeah.
This is just straight security analysis. So Stephen, thank you. And I hope we'll talk again soon. And Henry, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan, as
always. Yeah. And I am Jim Grant, thanking you as well on behalf of Current Yield, Grant's Interest Rate Observer of the Air.